Catholic Christians kept evangelizing, and conversions were taking place. In 517 AD, the Burgundians accepted the Catholic faith. In 517 AD, the Burgundians accepted the Catholic faith. So it's spreading. In 589 AD, the Visigoths officially accepted the Catholic faith, rejecting their Arianism. And during the 700s, Lombard King Liutprand's reign was 712 to 744. It was during his reign that the Lombards as well embraced Catholic Christianity. So through the 500s all the way up into the 700s, they're being converted to Catholic Christianity, to the Nicene Creed, the Apostles' Creed, the Chalcedon Creed. So it's during this whole period of time of the Germanic tribes being converted to Catholic Christianity. So remember back, Clovis, by the evangelism of his princess wife that he married, Clotilda, they married 493. He was converted 496. Lord Jesus Christ gave him victory, right? But his wife kept evangelizing him. That was 496. Boethius died 524 AD. Boethius died 524 AD. Justinian the Great died 565. But in this whole period of time, Benedict of Nursia, 480 to 547 AD. 480 to 547 AD. He's a contemporary of all these individuals when all this is taking place. He lived during this time, and he had a long-term influence on the Catholic Church in the West. And most of you have heard of the Benedictine monasteries. This is the individual that came about, Benedict of Nursia. He was a native of Nursia. You say, well, where is that? It's in northern Italy. Northern Italy. His parents sent him to Rome as a young man to study. He found Rome to be full of corruption, and he fled. He lived as a hermit in a cave just east of Rome. Remember, the monks, if they lived alone, they were called hermits. He struggled with sexual desires, sexual sin. And he's known to, at one time, rolled around naked in thorns and nettles to fight sexual sin. And I remember back when I was getting a Bachelor of Science degree in forestry at the University of Minnesota, studying nettles. One of the nastiest, thorniest things you ever did see in your life. And I'm not kidding. And he rolled around naked in that to cure him of his sexual desires. Which it did, I guess. Pastor Ron and I are not necessarily advocating that of anyone here. Marry. If you're burning up with passion, find a good spouse, marry. That's what the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians 7 would say. But remember, at this time, we covered this from the 300s on, the Catholic Church had the view that marriage is good, but the best is single life. Where you and I would look at it from Paul in 1 Corinthians 7 and say, well, what's your calling? You don't necessarily have to be a single life and go roll around in thorn bushes naked, okay? But he did, and he did. Benedict of Nursia. He founded in 529 AD the famous monastery. It was Monte Cassino. It was between Rome and Naples. Kind of where you're going along down that Rome, kind of southwest, and well, west, I should say, and then Naples further south. It's between Rome and Naples, his monastery. And Nick Needham points out he preached, he fed the poor, and I put in quotes, healed the sick. There were people that claimed that he had the power to heal the sick. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. Benedict wrote his own rule, it was called, for his monastery, the Code of Conduct, and it was based on previous rules, such as Basil of Caesarea and John Cassian. When we went through the rise of the monasteries from the Egyptian monks, there were different ones that kind of moved out from there and spread it and wrote their own rules for their monasteries, Basil of Caesarea, John Cassian, and he kind of looked at those. What did they write? And then he included much of those rules within his for codes of conduct. Benedict divided his monk's day into three periods. If I looked at you and say, well, what do you do every day? How much time do you waste? What do you do in your day? This is what he did. He laid out three things. This is rules they had to do in his monastery. Number one, collective worship, and it would last 4.5 hours every day. Collective worship. Manual work, number two, manual work, and that would last 6 to 7 hours. Doing manual work every day. And remember, manual work is good for you and I. Adam created and placed in a garden to cultivate and keep it. Doing physical work. The theologian John Murray, I read his collected writings. He was one, he lived on campus as a bachelor at Westminster Theological Seminary in Philadelphia, but he'd go help shovel snow with workers shoveling snow when the snowstorm hit. I mean, and he said, you know what? That's actually more noble than the white-collar man that just sits and does nothing but think, like the lawyer that just wants to sit and think. That's not the way we were created to be. Manual work lasting 6 or 7 hours a day. Number three, the study of the Bible and the early church fathers, 3 to 5 hours a day, every day. So if you include the collective worship of 4.5 hours with the study of the Bible and the early church fathers, collective worship and Bible study and studying the early church fathers could be 7.5 to 9.5 hours a day, every day, in addition to 6 or 7 hours of manual labor. And then he expected his monks to get 8 hours sleep each day. Idle hands are tools of the devil, it's been said. How much idle time did they have that the devil could get a hold of them and do stupid stuff? Amy says zero. That's right. He set his rules to keep them busy. Busy, busy, busy. He had it where other... Who's the abbot then? Who runs each monastery? Other monks elected the abbot who held the position for life. He wrote his rules so that on important decisions, the abbot was to consult all the monks, but otherwise no monk could challenge his decisions. So the abbot that ran the monastery on important decisions was to consult the other monks, but otherwise no monk could challenge his decisions. Each Benedictine monastery was to be self-sufficient. So they farmed and did other things, right? They were busy doing manual labor. Part of that manual labor is producing product and food and doing things, right? That they could meet their own needs. So you have all of these Benedictine monasteries then. Who's going to be in charge of all the monasteries? The Benedictine monasteries. Within each monastery, the abbot controls. But then who's in charge of all of them together as communities? He had it so that only the Pope of Rome would be, the Bishop of Rome would be in charge of all of his monasteries. So throughout this time, you still had the Pope of Rome. Remember, the Visigoths left the church buildings. The Benedictine rule became the most popular of all monastic rules. That's why this is so important. This is key in maintaining Western civilization in the Dark Ages. But the Benedictine rule became the most popular of all monastic rules. It involves lots of discipline, right? Lots of Bible study, lots of studying the early church fathers, lots of corporate worship every day, and also manual labor. Benedict is often called the father of Western monasticism. The father of Western monasticism. And one disciple of Benedict was Pope Gregory the Great, who died in 604 AD.